This message comes from NPR sponsor, Discover. Tired of not getting a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey, y'all. This is Sam's Aunt Betty. This week on the show, producer of NPR's Embedded, Tom Dreisbach, and Curbed Urbanism editor and LA podcast co-host, Alisa Walker. All right, let's start the show.
Hey, y'all, from NPR, I'm Sam Sanders. It's been a minute. Happy weekend. It feels like the short weekends are always the longest weekends, no?
The short weekends are always
the
long?
Short weeks, rather. Sorry. I'm so tired.
What day is
this
it?
Holiday week just has thrown me off.
It's always weird. I mean, an extra day is 50% more weekend. Like, that's a lot of extra weekend, and then it's a short week. I don't know.
Then you got to come in and make everything fit into one small work
week. Yeah, that's true.
This is my birthday week, though, so I got, you know, it was good.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
We should say again,
thank you.
Welcome to my guest, one of who just had a birthday, here with Alisa Walker, urbanism editor at Curbed, and Tom Dreisbach, reporter and producer for the NPR podcast Embedded. Glad you both are here. What exactly does urbanism mean?
It just means looking at cities as an entity, something to study. So whether it's transportation policy, housing policy, looking at people living together in close areas, and if that's good or bad, or it can be both.
It can be both. We are joined here in studio by Lizzo, who's having a very, very good week. She has a song that everyone's heard called Truth Hurts. It just hit number one this week. And I'm playing it because it has, like, a weird backstory.
Oh.
So this song just hit number one in September of 2019. It was first released in September of 2017.
Wait, really?
Yes.
I had no idea.
Oh, yeah. It's been out for 2 years. The song kind of just lingered in the ether for a long time. But a few months ago, it was in a Netflix rom-com called Someone Great.
I had never even
and
heard of the Netflix
in this Netflix rom-com. So this is a great week for Lizzo, but it's also a weird week for Lizzo because she is being sued over one of the lyrics in this song. For me, the best line in the song is when she talks about taking a DNA test.
I just took a DNA test. Turns out I'm 100% dead.
Fun, happy lyric. Someone is suing her saying, I had the meme first. I had that line first. This singer named Mina Lioness, this British singer, says that she first tweeted that phrase in 2017 and that Lizzo didn't give her credit. Lizzo says, I didn't steal it, but this other singer is mad because now Lizzo is trying to trademark the phrase. Yeah.
I'm mad at both of them.
I could never be mad at Lizzo.
Oh, that's true. Okay.
Could you be mad at Lizzo?
No, absolutely not.
It's impossible.
No.
Anyways, either way, congratulations, Lizzo. I'm 100% into Lizzo.
That's terrible, Sam.
We're going to start the show as we always do, asking my panelists to describe their week of news in only 3 words. Alisa, because this is your first time here on the show, we're going to let you go first.
I have 3 words.
What are they?
Light bulbs, cheeseburgers, and straws.
That's the most Mad Libs 3 words I've heard on the show yet. And I love it, and I want you to explain it all to me.
All right, so I'm assuming you all watched the 7-hour climate town hall this week.
Did
Why
you
are you laughing? Why are you laughing?
It's a long, it was long. It was very long.
Did I think you? Climate change advanced in the span of those 7 hours. It was so long.
You had to watch it, right?
I had to watch it. We've been reporting on it at Curbed. And this was the biggest tweeted moment, I think, of the entire 7-hour marathon.
And this 7-hour thing took place on CNN.
This
was it
CNN.
Wednesday?
Yeah. And they give 10 candidates who are the top qualifying candidates about 30 minutes to answer audience questions. And then the moderators, who were different CNN anchors, kind of peppered it with their own questions.
Uh-huh.
So Chris Cuomo asks Elizabeth Warren this question about if she would, like, force every American to switch over to these energy efficient light bulbs, because the Trump administration has just announced this rollback of a policy that would basically require everyone to start using LEDs and compact fluorescent bulbs, which are a big deal. It turns out it actually could you know, save a lot of energy and prevent a lot of carbon pollution. And she just smacks them down.
Really?
there are a lot of ways that we try to change our energy consumption and our pollution. And God bless all of those ways. Some of it is with light bulbs. Some of it is on straws. Some of it, dang, is on cheeseburgers, right? But understand, this is exactly what the fossil fuel industry hopes we're all talking about. That's what they want us to talk about.
So is the thing that Warren was pointing out was that, like, the straw debate is a distractionary tactic?
Perhaps a straw man, I would say. Oh. But yes, the straw, well, the straw debate has no place in a climate forum. It has nothing to do with climate change.
So then why is everyone
kept talking about, they asked, like, Kamala Harris to, like, demonstrate drinking out of, a paper straw. Yes, it was like.
So is the thing that Warren was pointing out was that, like, this focus on the individual is actually distracting from what could change things the most, which is collective action on a larger, wider scale involving these big corporations?
I think her answer was really good, and that was really a good point. You know, and what we've also learned about the fossil fuel industry, just including the fact that they have downplayed the science and actually actively tried to promote these ideas that plant a tree is going to save everything, you know, and when trees are great and very important.
Love a tree.
But it's actually fossil fuel industries that are the problem.
And so I want to talk about your beat. You cover transportation. And
right.
You were talking with us this week about how, in the same way that there are distractions about the real causes of climate change, one of the biggest culprits is a thing that no one wants to talk about, which is how everyday people transport themselves from point A to point B. Cars and planes, right?
Well, not even planes. It's really just cars.
Okay, tell me.
Planes are small. So if you look at the breakdown of greenhouse gas emissions emitted by the United States, 29% is transportation.
Wow.
A large majority
really?
Of that is just cars, just our passenger private
really?
Vehicles. And in a state like California,
oh my God.
It's even more because we've cleaned our grid up so much that the cars are making an even bigger impact on our climate emissions.
I mean, I guess the question is, how much do we individually bear responsibility then for changing that when, especially in a place like California or in any kind of rural place in the country, like, how else are you supposed to get around? I mean, there are other options in Los Angeles. I shouldn't.
All right, so let me blow your mind
again. Okay,
tell me. One third of trips taken in this country, so trip is just every time you leave your house, are 3 miles or less.
Really?
Even in Los Angeles, this holds true.
Yeah. Mm.
It's every time you leave the house, you're probably going to go a short enough distance that you could maybe walk or bike or take transit. And the time difference is, you know, a big deal.
Right.
That's what's going to change people's minds about what they're going to do.
Yeah.
But if your city allowed you to do it, if your city helped you, if your city, you know, prioritized this.
Well, and this is what's interesting, particularly in a place like California. We have seen the Trump White House fight things like stricter auto emissions laws, while California has said, we want them, and the car companies have said, we want them too. In the midst of this kind of gridlock, where can action on this stuff really come from? Does it come from the cities and states? Will it ever come from Congress and the White House? What is the most likely path for change here?
It has to be both, and it's clear that cities can't do it on their own because a lot of them
have
been.
Locals, they don't want that bus lane, they don't want that bike lane.
Yeah, you need to kind of manage, but you need the federal funding to say, you know, we're putting, you know, $1 trillion into sidewalks. And on the other side, you do need to have the leaders at the city level that are standing up for these changes and saying, I want to give people more options. I'm not going to prioritize cars.
Do we end up with a system that is just patchwork across the country to address these things? You know, eventually California's doing one thing, Wyoming's doing one thing, Alabama's doing something else, and that's what it is.
We did something once that was on a national scale. The highway system.
We built the federally
funded highway system that cut through our cities and have caused very poor health outcomes for kids who now have asthma and higher rates in those inner city neighborhoods. So if we could honestly reverse that, we would solve a lot of problems. And you put in high-speed rail between the cities that, you know, you talk about people in rural areas are not able to maybe transition to public transit and or, you know, ride a bike as far distances. So you can fill in the gaps with things like high-speed rail and regional rail. Mm-hmm. You undo all those decisions to put freeways through the
middle
of our cities.
You're going to take the 405
away? Hell please. Yeah. Yeah. Please. Like 10 monorails just going back and forth.
If you listen, if you could get rid of the 405, I would vote for you for president.
I will put that on the top of my list. It's not that strange of an idea when you look at what other cities and other countries are doing who have decided that this is more important. Yeah.
Tommy D, you got three words?
I do.
Now
I do.
Everyone listening knows my nickname for you.
Thanks a lot, Sam.
Oh, yeah.
So from one intractable problem to another one, my three words are, instead of follow the leader, the leader follows.
Ah, which leader?
Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, okay. Senate Republican from Kentucky.
Oh, yeah.
He, last month, in early August, after the shootings in El Paso and in Dayton, Ohio, he did something kind of surprising, which is he came out, he was on a radio show in Louisville, and he said that he was going to take up gun control legislation.
What we can't do is fail to pass something, you know, by just locking up and failing to pass. That's unacceptable. What I want to see here is an outcome, not a bunch of partisan back and forth shots across the bow.
Okay.
So that's what he said in early August.
Gotcha.
This past week, on Tuesday, he was on Hugh Hewitt's show, and he sounded much different.
If the president took a position on a bill, so that we knew we would actually be making a law and not just having serial votes, I'd be happy to put it on the floor. And the administration is in the process of studying what.
So he basically said, I'll only put this up if I know Trump will sign it.
Exactly. What happened is that in the meantime, you know, in early August, President Trump was saying, we're going to have smart background checks. We're going to talk about this. We're going to make something
happen.
Which
was also surprising.
And then he had a phone call with the head of the NRA, Wayne LaPierre, and they were against essentially most of the proposals floating around, including enhanced background checks. And so President Trump changed his tune. He's now against most of the gun control proposals out there. And Mitch McConnell is in this position where he said, we can't do nothing, but the president now is not on board with gun control.
What does this say about Mitch McConnell and what he wants and what his strategy is?
Mitch McConnell is a party guy.
Okay.
And he is up for re-election 2020 in Kentucky. Mm-hmm. And the thing to know about him is he is a very unpopular senator in his own state. His approval rating is below 40%. It's in the mid-30s.
As he is the most powerful man in Washington, D.C.
He's among the most powerful people in the country, maybe the world.
Wow.
And he is not popular in his home state. But Donald Trump is incredibly popular in Kentucky. And they're both on the ballot in 2020. And part of Mitch McConnell's strategy for winning re-election is binding himself as closely as possible to the president. Because he is hoping that though you might not like me, you like the president, and I'm the guy that's getting the president's agenda passed.
So in that political environment, who in the GOP is actually in charge of setting the terms of the gun control debate? The NRA, the president, or Mitch McConnell?
Well, if you ask Mitch McConnell, it's the president. And all of the debate will flow through the president. If he endorses something, he will follow that. And so if President Trump did want gun control, he's actually in a unique position to push it and change that gridlock. If he were to be the president that said, we are going to pass universal background checks, we are going to consider an assault weapons ban, he could actually, I think, given his popularity with the Republican Party, he could actually push that through.
Because his base will never leave him.
His base will never leave him. And I think that's why you saw someone like Mitch McConnell say, oh, yeah, we'll consider this, when before he never would have considered it.
And Tom, you know a lot about Mitch McConnell and what he wants because your show has been covering him extensively. Talk about that.
Yeah, we've been doing a long, deep dive into Mitch McConnell's career and his political rise from his time as a small local official in Louisville, Kentucky, to the Senate Majority Leader, which is one of the most powerful positions in Washington.
Oh, yeah.
And he has done that while being kind of a boring figure in certain ways. But he ends up, like, when you dig into his career, he actually has had a fascinating arc that kind of tells you a lot about how politics has changed in this country.
podcast is called Embedded. A lot of episodes all about Mitch. Go check it out. What's the name of the series?
Mitch. It's just called Mitch. We didn't come up with anything better.
On that note, it's time for a break. Coming up, we're going to talk about another intractable problem, Brexit. If you think you're confused trying to follow the latest twists and turns over there, imagine actually being in the UK right now. After the break, we'll cross the pond. I shouldn't say cross the pond. It's such a cliche. I'm saying it. After the break, we're going to cross the pond and talk to a real live UK resident and ask her what it's like to live through that political Game of Thrones.
Real live?
Real live. You're listening to It's Been a Minute from NPR. We'll be right back.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services. With a franchised network of highly trained agents and advanced marketing tools, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services network members aim to provide something more than just real estate. They think beyond the next transaction and build relationships based on your long-term goals to ensure you'll get all the value that home brings, year after year, home after home. All that more they do, that's home services. Start your home search at BerkshireHathawayHS.com. Support also comes from BetterHelp. BetterHelp offers licensed professional counselors who specialize in issues such as depression, stress, anxiety, and more. Connect with your professional counselor in a safe and private online environment at your convenience. Get help at your own time and your own pace. Schedule secure video or phone sessions, plus chat and text with your therapist. Visit BetterHelp.com/minute to learn more.
Starting college can be overwhelming.
Everyone from almost every background has that fear that they got in here by accident. That's scary.
NPR's Life Kit is here to help make your freshman year a little easier. Listen to NPR Life Kit's new guide on college, or subscribe to Life Kit All Guides for all the episodes all in one place.
We are back. You're listening to It's Been a Minute from NPR, the show where we catch up on the week that was. I'm Sam Sanders, here in studio with two guests, Alyssa Walker, urbanism editor at Curbed. I love that job title.
Thank you.
And Tom Dreisbach, reporter and producer for the NPR podcast Embedded. I have a question for you both.
Mm.
Would you describe yourselves as optimist or pessimist?
I'm an optimist.
Okay.
I have to be.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have two children.
Okay.
Cautious optimist.
Okay.
I would say.
I am a pessimist wrapped in an optimist sheep's clothing.
Ooh.
Ooh. Why are you deceiving us, Sam?
My inner monologue is very much like a sad Jerry Seinfeld.
You're like a turducken.
Yes, a turducken of emotion.
What's the deal with this news?
Basically. Anyways, I bring this up because there is a new study which finds that if you're an optimist, you'll live longer. The Washington Post wrote all about it. I will quote the Washington Post to you now. They said that these Boston area scientists found that the most optimistic people live an average of 11 to 15% longer than their more pessimistic peers. Do we believe
that?
That's
a lot.
That's a lot.
I don't know. Is it self-fulfilling, right? Are you a pessimist because your life is terrible and you die younger? I'm sorry. But or are you optimist because you have good health and so you're happier in general?
But bright side, if you aren't an optimist already, there's good news from this study. They said the mindset is about 25% hereditary, which means you do have some control over it.
Hmm.
So you can walk yourself to a more optimistic future if you want.
Is this like The Secret, Sam?
I basically, yes.
Wait, it literally said walking?
Well, not walk. Sorry, that was me.
I mean, I was like,
emotionally
walking. Emotionally walking. I think that is actually true.
Well, walking is, sure, is for sure good for the
immune system. How did they do this study?
Skeptical.
Come on.
Next season on Embedded.
Sorry, I'm pessimistic about this study.
You are pessimistic about this study.
Cynical, at least.
Speaking of other things to be pessimistic about, Brexit.
It should always be said like that.
Brexit. It's such a mess. It's such a mess. So this week, lawmakers voted to block the new Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, from pulling the UK out of the EU without a deal. So now the UK is even further away from a clean exit than it was already. It was so dramatic, so complicated, and so heated. Here's just a bit of tape about what British politics sounded like this week.
Don't gesticulate. Don't rant. Spare us the theatrics. Behave yourself. Be a good boy.
What is in the water over there?
Order! Order!
I love when they stand up and just start yelling.
It makes me so sad that our Congress is not like that.
Right?
I
would enjoy it for
out.
5 minutes and I'd be like, stop it, y'all. Stop it, y'all. So anyways, Brexit's getting crazy. It's been crazy. I'm not going to try to explain the back and forth to you, but what we're going to do right now is talk with someone who can tell us what it feels like to live through this. It is time for our segment, Long Distance. We call someone up in this segment from around the world and ask them how the news is affecting them this week. Today, we're joined by Elizabeth Cox. She's a substitute teacher who lives in London. Hi.
Oh, hello. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm all right, yeah.
So I asked Elizabeth to tell me, to the best of her ability, what in the world is going on over there?
This is a really good question, and if anybody could answer it, that would really help. I think most people I know have just kind of given up.
Oh.
And given up kind of trying to engage, like, pretty much all of August, I just didn't bother reading any news. Just avoided it.
So, you are a substitute teacher. What grade do you substitute teach?
I do everything from nursery, so like 3, 4, up to like year 6 here. So it's like 11-year-olds pretty much. So
that's the sweetest thing.
All the primary.
Yeah. What in the world do you tell your students about Brexit when they ask you about Brexit, which I assume they do?
It depends on the age, and it depends on their, like, what I generally try to do is say, oh, what do you think? But a lot of the time it comes down to, well, you know, it's nicer that we're all together, you know, that all of the countries are working together. But if, you know, if that's not what's working best for one person, I try to bring it just to like their level of understanding, like bring it to football teams or bring it to like class relationships. But I also, they're more aware of Roblox, Minecraft and TikTok than they are. Like, they know who Lil Nas X is. They do not know who, you know, Jeremy Corbyn is. Or
it's probably better that way.
Yeah, I think so.
So are there, I have this image in my head of like Brits in the cafe, in the bar, wherever, like fighting about this stuff, fighting over Brexit. Are there like public arguments and clashes over the Brexit insanity?
No, there are clashes. But there's more in my like line of work, there's more just sussing out the room. And there are those moments of tension when someone mentions like where they've been on holiday or something like that, like kind of trying to figure out how they stand on certain things and whether you can make that joke or not, whether you can say, oh, we'll have to get a visa to go there next year or whatever, whether you can make that joke or not. And yet, like, here I am with teaching kids in school and having to make sure they feel calm, but also kind of, you know, buying more chickpeas in my weekly shop so that I've got a Brexit storage, and having conversations in staff room about how there was no fruit and veg in like certain like Tesco's and stuff. And
so you're a Brexit prepper?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Like, minimally, like, on the low-key prepping. Just low-key, getting a lot
goodness.
Of pasta, a lot of chickpeas.
Wow. So, from what you've been telling me, it seems like because of all the insanity in the government right now around Brexit, you've had to kind of check out a bit. Do you think it's a good thing for UK citizens and residents to say, I can't focus on this anymore? Like, should, in spite of the insanity, y'all be still paying attention a lot to it, even though it's hard?
Yeah, we should be. Yeah, everybody should be. But I feel like the thing that's taken on that, the anger and the activism has got, it's more climate change. Because with climate change, I think people see that there's maybe a way of helping or changing things. Whereas with politics, it seems so insurmountable because voting doesn't seem to really count.
Wait, I hear you telling me that people where you are feel like climate change is an easier problem to solve than Brexit?
Yeah, pretty much.
are you surprised that it's gotten that bad? Like, when the vote happened, did you say, you know, whether you wanted to happen or not, did you say to yourself, well, the vote's happened, this is what's going to happen? And now, like, did you expect to still be mired in this muck and mire years later?
No. I didn't think it would happen. I didn't think that we'd still be talking about it.
You think it's still going to happen?
I didn't think that. I don't know. I don't even know if we will leave the EU or not.
Wow.
Now.
If you could talk to all of these politicians in your country right now arguing over Brexit, what would you tell them?
I'd say you need to act like professionals. This is not a joke, and it's not a way for you to look better. You look terrible, and you aren't making anybody's lives easier, including yourselves.
Mm. When they finally figure out what they're going to do, and who knows when that will be, but like once they have like a final decision and a final plan, how long do you think it will take for things to get back to normal?
That's really difficult because I don't think that things can, really.
Mm.
I think there's been a break and a change, and I think until Gen Z have started a new Gen A. I think that it's just going to sit there in consciousness, and it's going to be this thing. It's an open wound, and I don't think that it's going to necessarily just get better.
Well, hey, Elizabeth, I really thank you so much for talking with me as an American following the saga. I can only imagine what y'all are going through, and now I understand a bit more. So you have my thoughts and my sympathies in this crazy time in the UK. I hope you have a great weekend, Elizabeth.
You too. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Thanks again to Elizabeth Cox, a substitute teacher in London, living through all this Brexit drama in real time. I'm back here in studio with my two panelists, not in London, but in Los Angeles. What do we make of what she's saying?
Just made me think, like, what have they been able to get done in the UK in the last 3 years since the Brexit vote? Like, this seems like all they've talked about for 3+ years. Like, does anything else happen in the government there? Like, it just seems like we have a deal, we don't have a deal.
We have a prime minister, we don't have a prime minister.
The part where she was talking about how you start talking to somebody and you have to read them really fast to see if they agree with you or not. I feel that way about climate change. I feel that way about guns. I feel that way about politics in general in this country, and it has made me really change the way that I make small talk with people in the last few years in a way that I have not done before.
Really?
Yeah.
I used to tell folks all the time, we talk about politics, you need to, and now I'm just like, everybody shut up. Everybody shut up. Anyways, it is time for a break. When we come back, we're going to lighten the mood with my favorite game, Who Said That? I'm Sam Sanders. You are listening to It's Been a Minute from NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Discover. Here's a familiar situation. You have a question about your credit card. You call the number for help and can't get a hold of anyone. If only you had a Discover card. With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. A real person. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. This message comes from NPR sponsor Hulu. Dive into the chilling new Hulu original series, Under the Bridge, the riveting adaptation of the acclaimed true crime book. Based on shocking true events, Under the Bridge tells the haunting story of a murder that lays bare a small community's darkest secrets. Go deep into the hidden world of the town's tormented teenagers as detectives race to solve the sinister crime. Starring Riley Keough and Lily Gladstone, Under the Bridge is now streaming with new episodes Wednesdays, only on Hulu.
There's more to watch and read these days than any one person can get to. That's why we make Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. Twice a week, we sort through the nonsense, share reactions, and give you the lowdown on what's worth your precious time. Listen and subscribe to NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour.
We are back. You're listening to It's Been a Minute from NPR, the show where we catch up on the week that was. I'm Sam Sanders, joined in studio with two guests, Tom Dreisbach, reporter and producer for the NPR podcast Embedded, and Alyssa Walker, urbanism editor at Curbed. You have a podcast too, huh?
I do.
Tell folks what it is.
I'm on a podcast called LA Podcast.
Okay.
It's the most ungoogleable name possible, but it is about LA.
Okay. Then I will listen. I love LA. All right, it's time for my favorite game. Who said that? All right. This game is the most simple game, but also the most fun. I have three quotes from the week of news. I'll read the quote. You have to guess who said it or what story I'm talking about.
Okay.
The winner gets absolutely nothing.
Wow.
Although, you know what?
I'm out.
I'm gonna get it for you all after. We had a listener send me some mail this week. We had some initials, so I don't know. But they said, you always say that you have no prizes for who said that. Well, I sent you one. They sent a shot glass.
Oh.
A little Bud Light shot glass. So I will award it to the winner after we finish this game. It's at my desk, okay? All right.
I'm back in.
Yes. First quote. You ready?
I guess.
There are no buzzers. Just yell out the answer when you have it. First quote. Gee, thanks. Just bought it. Shop our favorite trend, ATM. Shop link in bio.
Ariana Grande? Hey, that shot glass is going to be mine.
So that quote's from the retail chain Forever 21. They were quoting, without permission, the Ariana Grande song, Seven Rings, in some of their ads. Ariana had been talking with them about possibly licensing something. She said, No, you aren't offering enough. Forever 21 just did it anyway.
Aren't they also, like, filing for bankruptcy?
There's that. Yes. So they may very well file for bankruptcy soon. This is weird, though. I feel like the older I get, all of the stores that were in the mall when I was a kid, they're dying.
Well, so is the mall.
Don't tell me that.
Is Hot Topic still a thing?
It is. Hot Topic is doing well, actually.
All right, Tommy D, you got that first one.
Woohoo!
Second one is, here we go. Ready? Quote, the curses and spells used in the books are actual curses and spells, which when read by a human being, risk conjuring evil spirits into the presence of the person reading the text.
J.K. Rowling?
Close enough.
Harry Potter?
It's the Harry Potter scandal.
There's a scandal?
There's a Harry Potter scandal. A school in Nashville, St. Edward Catholic School, they announced that now students can no longer check out the Harry Potter book series from their school's library. And that quote was from the Reverend Dan Rehill. He is a priest at that school. They are basically saying, this stuff is like real witchcraft, real hexes, so we don't want that out there. To which I say, those Harry Potter books and movies have been out for a while. The spells have been cast.
It's a little late.
Harry Potter, is the game tied?
It is.
Yes.
The game is tied. This last one for all the marbles. This is a fun one. Last quote. Ready?
Okay.
I've decided to retire and have my family. I know you guys are happy now. To my fans, keep repping me. Do it till the death of me. X in the box. Because ain't nobody checking me. Love you for life.
Jeremy Renner.
We should have done that.
The Jerry Marrow.
As a sidebar, listeners, if you want a fun roller coaster ride of a story, go read Whatever Happened to Actor Jeremy Renner and His Fan App. It was hacked, but also shut down. And also, I can't even really tell who Jeremy Renner is. It was weird, but it's not that. Sorry.
Okay.
Someone retired this week.
Someone retired.
Someone
this
announced
week.
The retirement this week. Famous rapper, a famous rapper who was a woman.
Oh, Nicki Minaj.
Yes. So Nicki Minaj tweeted this week that she wants more time with her family, like she's a politician, and said she's retiring. Do we believe it?
No.
Me neither.
Not remotely.
She's worked hard, though. I mean, she's earned it if she wants to.
Yeah. I just feel like she's feeling some heat. There are a lot of up-and-coming women rappers that are challenging her spot on the throne. Mm-hmm. I hate that we live in a world where rappers who are women are compared to each other, but there's been some drama. You know, she's had a little spat with Cardi B and some other ones. But, you know, I like Nicki. Stay in the game. I'll miss you if you leave.
She'll be back. No question. She'll be back. And then we'll have the comeback tour.
Which I'll go to.
Yeah.
Tom.
Yes.
You won the game.
Oh, my God.
Congratulations.
A Bud Light.
You get the shot glass. To that listener, whoever you are who sent that in, thank you for it. We only had your initials. But know that I got that letter and that mail and that postcard. I thank you. I'm sure Tom thanks you as well.
I thank you so much.
Yeah.
This is think of all the shots of beer you can do this weekend.
Congrats, Tommy D. All right, that concludes Who Said That. Listeners, now it's time to end the show as we always do. Every week we ask you all to share with us the best things that have happened to you all week. We get a lot of submissions. We pick some and play them for you. Let's hear it.
Hi, Sam. This is Amy from Burlington, Vermont. As of this week, I have completed a goal to write down a highlight of my week every week for an entire year. And it's been a pretty good year. Thanks for the inspiration.
Hey, Sam. This is Trisha from Cary, North Carolina. And the best thing that happened to me this week was my husband Steve and I went to Roanoke, Virginia to celebrate his mom and dad's 94th and 96th birthdays.
The best part of my week is I got to call my first ever employee and tell her that she got the job.
The best part of my week was leaving my job tonight for the last time.
I defended my doctoral dissertation research and I passed.
Hi, Sam. This is Megan. My husband and I are leaving Australia today after two wonderful weeks. He's currently out taking photographs of kangaroos outside of our hotel room. It's been a blast.
Hey, Sam. This is Lori in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And the best part of my week is that after spending almost all of 2019 living in my parents' basement with my husband and my two-year-old and my baby and my dog and my cat, I just made my bed in our very own house.
Hi, Sam. This is Janice from Denver, Colorado. A couple of months ago, my grandson said to me, Grandma, I want to sleep in the mountains. So I borrowed some equipment and enlisted the help of friends, and we had our first camping trip in the mountains. It was such a joy to watch a kid play in the dirt that doesn't like to get messy. And in the end, he said, Grandma, when can we go camping again?
Thanks.
Thanks so much.
And have a great week. Oh.
God bless the grandmas.
Listen that to all those heart- optimists.
It was, yes. They're all going to live a long life.
It's heartwarming.
I also love the juxtaposition of job news. One was like, I got to give someone the job offer, and someone else was like, I left my job. I love it. Thanks to all of those listeners you just heard. Amy, Trisha, Patrick, Jonathan, Sherrod, Megan, Lori, and Janice. Keep those coming. We listen to all of them that come in. You can send in your best thing at any point throughout any week. Just record yourself on your phone and email that voice file to me at samsanders@npr.org. samsanders@npr.org. We're going to go home, take it out of here with my favorite, Lizzo, and her song Truth Hurts, which just hit number one on the Billboard charts after being released 2 years ago. Congrats, Lizzo. Good things come to those who wait. speaking of good things, thanks again to my guests this week. Alyssa Walker, urbanism editor at Curbed. Tom Dreisbach, reporter and producer for the NPR podcast Embedded. So glad you both were here.
Thanks, Sam.
Thank you.
Really, really fun. This week, the show was produced by Brent Bachman, Anjali Sastry, and Jason Fuller. Our fearless editors are Jordana Hochman, Alex McCall, and Kitty Isley. Our director of programming is Steve Nelson. Our big boss is NPR's senior VP of programming, Anya Grundman. Listeners, thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm Sam Sanders. Talk soon.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Viore, a new perspective on performance apparel. Clothing designed with premium fabrics, built to move in, styled for life. For 20% off your first purchase, go to viore.com/NPR.
Support for NPR and the following message come from IXL Online. Is your child asking questions on their homework you don't feel equipped to answer? IXL Learning uses advanced algorithms to give the right help to each kid, no matter the age or personality. One subscription gets you everything. One site for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And NPR listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/NPR.
This is my voice. It can tell you a lot about me. And I'm not changing it for anyone.
In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of NPR episodes centered on Black experiences. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcasts.